His Christmas tree looked like Charlie Brown's Christmas tree.
Welcome.
Hello, space travelers.
It was live, he just dug it up out of this field. It's a lot better off than I was. I put out my yard, I ran for about 100 pounds, it dropped, it looks like a real tree. I had nails everywhere. That's smart, they can think of that. Yeah, it was good.
Okay, we're on. Welcome, fellow space travelers. That was a line George Carlin used years ago one time, and it always stuck with me.
Nanu Nanu.
Yeah, Nanu Nanu. That's another one.
Remember that.
We've got a lot of the 60s brain cells working this morning for some reason, okay? They aren't all dead, okay? Good to know, isn't it? Wow. Where did that memory come from? Well, those cells are still alive. They don't function all the time, but they're still alive.
Just like the
60s. Just like the 60s. As somebody said, if you remember them, you really weren't there, okay? We won't go any further with that one, right? This is consciousness raising, okay? Rather than erasing, okay? That feels good, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Wow. See, that's what we're here for, too. Okay. We can get so serious about illusions.
Oh, that's an illusion. Don't get caught in that one. All right.
And then all of a sudden we can begin to laugh about that. Because it's really rather humorous in some ways. The things that catch us up. As I was telling some people before we got started this morning, is the beginning of last week, I forgot who I was. I do that fairly often, all right, but this was a big one. I forgot for a couple of days. Sometimes it's just a few minutes, and then I remember again. But our heat went out on Saturday morning, the coldest day of the year, and we called up the heating people who were attached to our homeowner's warranty, and they said they would be right out. Well, right out turned to be Sunday night, and Sunday night they told us that the motor on our heat pump had burnt out, and they couldn't get one until Monday morning, which we said, okay, it's Sunday night, so I think we can last until Monday morning. Nobody showed up Monday. Well, we got promises and promises. Nobody showed up Tuesday until finally 6 o'clock Tuesday night somebody showed up. And the guy who showed up Tuesday night said, "What's the problem?" If I had a gun, I would have shot him, all right? And then he took the motor out and then he just disappeared. He walked out of the house with the burnt out motor and he disappeared. And I expected him just to go out to his truck and bring in a new one. But he just disappeared. He was gone for about an hour. And I said, oh my God. And he finally showed up again with a new motor Tuesday night. So anyway, but during that, I held it together up until probably about Monday. Because there was so little communication going on between us and these. We'd call them up and we'd get nothing. So I turned it to somebody who was waiting for the heating people to show up. And I realized that was much more than that later on, but it took me a while. And that's kind of what today's lesson is about. We're on a chapter called Help. But it's not about needing help so much. Right? It's being about open to help. and realizing where that help comes from, which is not from some outside source necessarily, but truly from my divine self. So it is another form of surrender. Okay, who you think you are that needs help is not the aspect of you that really is going to be able to get it. Okay. So it's somewhat paradoxical that I have to surrender the me that I think needs help to the part of me that can really accept where the truth lies. And a phrase that is going to keep repeating itself through this particular section is not in words, but in thought and in energy, is that wonderful phrase from the Course in Miracles, "In my defenselessness, my safety lies." So as soon as I find something to fight, or something to argue with, or something to struggle with, right, I have created an obstacle to my awareness of my divine self. Does that make sense? Not that any of us would ever do that. But again, Jesus on the cross is such a great example of that. "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." Didn't have anything to do with, "Oh, well, I'm in so much pain, this is awful, this is horrible, ain't it awful, look what they did to me." Right? Didn't have anything to do with that at all. It bypasses that thought that we have of suffering and goes to a completely different place. One that is still very, very difficult to imagine. Okay? Now I have to really remember who I am to be able to be open to that kind of strength and to that kind of witness. Because if I forget who I am and get lost in the circumstances of my life, I'm certainly not going to be in the place of, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." I was not saying that about the heating people. I was saying other things. But it wasn't, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." I knew they didn't know what they do. But that but I really was not into forgiveness that particular time. Okay. I'm going to pick up on the middle of page 243. I didn't realize, you know, how great it felt to laugh about something like that. What you intend with this is that 100 million will become activated. Remember the exercise we did about imagining 100 people and then 1,000 people and then 100 million people and saying pretty much the same thing, that I am word through all that I see before me. So wouldn't that be wonderful to say when you're watching the news? Okay, not just with the war in Syria, all right? But with political moves and somebody saying this and somebody saying that, I am word through all that I see before me. So it's not avoiding those things that trigger our stuff. The stuff that triggers our stuff is our stuff, okay, and needs to be dealt with. It's as the marvelous line from the Razor's Edge. Years and years ago, it was from a Somerset Maugham novel, I believe, and Bill Murray played the lead. It was when Bill Murray was still very much a comedian, but this was a serious role he played in this one. And there's a line in that that says, "It's easy to be a holy man on top of a mountain." So it's easy to be a holy person when you're avoiding all of the things that make you unholy. To really be holy, you have to be in the midst of all of those things that trigger your stuff and recognize that it's just my stuff. What you intend with this is that 100 million will become activated into the frequency that will realign them into their own knowing of themselves and as an aspect of the Creator. How their systems choose to operate with this must be in accordance with their own soul's will for them, and you don't know what that is. Neither do I. You do not proselytize, you do not force. The energy does the work. I am word through all that I see before me. That is probably the most significant paragraph, I believe, in this whole book. If you can get what leads up to it and where it's leading to. It's sort of a very pivotal kind of moment, right? That first of all, I know nothing about what it does to you, but I can raise your level of frequency as I raise my level of frequency, as I see all of those before me in love and in light. I am word through all those I see before me. But I do not know with my conscious mind what that's going to look like with you or in you. Okay, it might be totally different than what I might expect. In fact, one of the things that raising your vibration or frequency might do is put you face to face with your stuff. And so it might make you really angry, or it might make you really hurt, or it might make you really act out some kind of negative emotion that you need to act out to learn the lesson you need to learn. You see, I have no idea what that is. But how quickly I can move into judgment. But if I am willing to be in that place, I am word through all of those I see before me. I know that that energy is doing its work, not just on me or in me, but on and in you as well. And I have no idea what form that's going to take. But I bless that. And yes, this works across borders, across cultural lines and religions. We have spoken to you already in our first text that this is a work that is being functioned in different cultures, in different vocabularies, but the intent is the same. Each one is walking on this earth is an aspect of the Creator, whether or not they are conscious of it. Becoming conscious of it changes everything, and those borders and those walls will begin to disintegrate as this is truly understood. So I am word through all that I see before me does not turn someone Hindu or Christian or Muslim. It teaches them at a soul level that they are an aspect of the divine. And this is shared by all men, by all women, by all theories of creation in religion, even the creationists. We are each born with the seed of God, and that seed is coming to growth and it's blooming. I am word through all that I see before me. That's taken almost directly from a quote from Meister Eckhart, the 16th century mystic, right? Who said, the seeds of God that are within us produce God. They cannot do anything else. Pear seeds produce pears. God seeds produce God. Now, we told you in the last chapter that you could bypass physical form when you are working in frequency. And that is what you are doing here. If you have a book, we can read this together. If you don't, you can just suck in the energy. I am choosing now to recognize myself as a divine being in full manifestation. And as I am activated in word, I rise above this planet. I rise above the limitations of this physical world. And I claim this. I am word through all those standing before me on this earth. I am word through this intention. Word, I am word. And as this is done, the earth is healed. It is helped. It is loved. I am now seeing all that I see before me in its wisdom, in its awakening, and in its manifestation. Word, I am word, through this intention, word, I am word. Now notice, that can't happen if you think you are just a body. Or if you think you are just a mind, or if you think you are just a pile of thoughts and emotions, okay? We have to be identified, or at least slightly identified, with the truth of who we are in order to make those affirmations or make those prayers true, okay? So when you and I lose it, like when I lost it at the beginning of this week, when I became somebody waiting for the heating people, okay? I could say those words, right? But they would be kind of like cotton ball arrows. They just sort of bounce off. They sort of hit the wall and bounce off. Because I was in an identity, or an illusory identity, right? That really could not recognize that as being the truth. I'd sort of pat it on the head and say, well, that's nice, but I don't have any heat. Right? That's nice, but the people haven't called me today. That's nice, but. Okay? And see, what we're getting at here is, again, not condemning that, because I certainly don't do that. I keep learning this all the time. That part of being here on planet Earth is going through cycles of being awake and being asleep, or being aware and being unaware. Right? It's just part of, it's like, you know, the diurnal rhythm we get into, you know, when we sleep at night and we wake in the daytime. That's just a natural part of our being, okay? And so, for most of us, I believe, it is a natural part of our being to go through periods of sleeping and awaking, of awareness and unawareness, all right? The thing about it is that it's too pointed here in our learning. Point number one is that when you become aware again, or when you become awake again, it is about rejoicing in that awareness, not beating yourself up for falling asleep, because that doesn't do anything anyway. I mean, and what I learned, I was doing some work on this week, because I was going through a lot of periods of sleeping and awakening, and so I was going, what the hell is this all about, right? And one of the things that came to me was, along with the idea of rejoicing in those moments of awakening again, of awareness, is that wouldn't my soul be really reluctant to wake up if the only thing that was going to happen to it was going to get beat up for waking up again? I never thought about that before. And I went, oh, well, that makes perfect sense to me. Right? My soul's not going to want to wake up if the only thing I do to it is beat it up for being asleep. So it's going to be rather reluctant to wake up if that's the only way I'm treating it. So one of the levels here, one of the learnings here, is rejoicing in those moments of awakening. That's why I rejoice every Sunday morning here, because I got to be awake here. That's where the humor came from being awake. You're not very humorous when you're not awake. Right? You know, it's not very funny when you don't have a sense of humor. And usually my little self doesn't have much of a sense of humor. Right? Sarcasm and bitterness are its way of expressing itself usually. Okay. And the other thing, along with rejoicing in those moments of awakening, this is a little bit subtle, is the realization that even when I am asleep, or even when I am unaware, my soul is still learning. I don't know that, I'm not conscious of that, I'm not aware of that, but it is still true. Because wouldn't it be silly to think that my soul goes to sleep when my mind does? Or my soul sort of disappears or becomes non-existent when I become identified with my little self? It would seem rather ridiculous to me that it would happen that way. So my soul is still learning, whatever it is, even if I am not consciously aware of that learning. And notice what kind of a razor's edge that puts you on. Because your mind cannot grasp that. Well, but how can that happen? Well, because your soul has a totally different consciousness than your thinking mind does. Oh. But see, my thinking mind wants to be able to grasp that, wants to be able to write it down, wants to be able to pin it down, wants to be able to put it on a piece of paper, and it can't do that. And so in its frustration, he thinks, well, that's not really happening. But wouldn't it be silly to think that my soul stops learning even though my mind is asleep?
Now, wait a minute. My soul is still learning.
That's what I mean.
Well, I didn't know your soul had to learn.
My soul, there's a difference between my spirit and my soul. I'm not going to get into too much semantic here because it confuses me as well. But my soul, when I say my soul, it's kind of ridiculous to say it that way, but my soul, which is part of my individuality in some ways, right, is on an evolutionary cycle as well. Okay? If you happen to believe in reincarnation, right, which is my soul going through another cycle of learning, okay, it knows it is one with God, but its knowing can be enhanced. It's like having a thimble. A thimble can be full of water, but so can a bucket. Okay, and so each time I grow and evolve, my capacity for truth, my capacity for knowing my oneness with God increases. And so that's part of my continual... The guides here are growing. Okay? They have actually said this is part of our process, is teaching you. We're not, like I said a couple of weeks ago, it's not looking at you and saying, well, we're going to teach these poor slobs here. And these poor slobs on planet Earth, they're really screwed. Okay? So we need to help them out. Yeah, that they're certainly being our teachers, but they are doing their learning as well. Their trip is not completed yet, nor is ours. So my soul is doing, you know, but when I talk about my soul learning, I have to recognize something that the Course in Miracles said, and that is that I can either learn through pain or through joy. Okay? Now my human self usually learns through pain, but I believe my soul essentially learns through joy. And that makes a big difference. Okay? Because I say, oh my God, what more I need to learn, right? But learning with joy makes a big, big difference, right? So I believe it kind of coincides with the teachings here. I believe my soul is continually growing, is learning, right? Perhaps not in the same way that my intellectual mind is, but in a way that allows for... the best words I can think of, allows for a larger capacity. So in other words, if I were a thimble full of water, I could say, well, I'm all filled up, my journey's finished. Right? And I look over there and go, yeah, but there's a bucket over there that can be filled with grace, can be filled with love, can be filled with water. What would it be like if I stretched myself a little bit more? So it kind of, to me, the soul's learning kind of coincides with Scott Peck's definition of love. When he said, love is the ability to stretch oneself for one's own spiritual growth or the growth of another. So if I look at my soul's growth as my soul kind of continually stretching, so its capacity for love, both to give and receive love, right, grows in the process. That's my take on it. And it'll probably change. But that's the best I can do with that one right now. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yes,
thank you. No, I appreciate the question. Thank you. We told you help was the chapter. And that the fear that tells you you require it and you are in danger needs to be dismantled. In my defenselessness, my safety lies. And we will explain this to you. It is the tool of control that keeps you in the belief that you are not safe. When someone says to you, so-and-so is after you, You have been poisoned in the energy of that person. And believe it or not, the person who may or may not be after you, but the one who told you the truth or the lie, or whatever he was saying about the brother, I know that someone is out to get you, prompts you immediately to put up a wall of fear. I am a rock, I am an island. Now, understanding this for what it is, frankly, which is a tactic of a mental construct, then you can contend with it and heal it. Oh, fear is an illusion. I can work with that. Or I am afraid of, most of the time, instead of getting into the illusion thing, which can get kind of confusing sometimes, most of the things that I'm afraid of haven't happened yet. And maybe never will. Okay? I'm afraid that they might happen. But can anybody be affected by that one? Afraid it might happen? Okay. Well, see, what that does is it creates the possibility that it will happen. See, I don't know that. Fear says, hold on to me and I will keep you safe. Because if you're really afraid that it might happen, well, if it does happen, you at least you cushion the blow a little bit. That's what fear will tell us. But what fear doesn't tell us is that if you're afraid of something, you're actually creating the energy of making that happen. Now, that doesn't mean, you know, if you're afraid of being sick, that you're going to make yourself sick. You might make yourself very uncomfortable. You know, because we can do a kind of turn that around and say, well, you know, I must have created this, must be something wrong with me. That's just the worst. Right? Please don't do that to yourself. If you created it or if you have it, work on healing it rather than beating yourself up for having it, whatever it is. Please. It's not about judgment. It's about awareness. Oh, here's what I got. What am I going to do about it? Can I love myself through this one? Can I forgive myself? Can I open myself up to the help that I need? Because I've identified with a little self, with a little part of myself that has become entrapped in this particular way of thinking. Now, we are not telling you that there are not situations when someone may be out to get someone. Kind of like, help, the paranoids are after me. Or there's a 12-step group of Paranoids Anonymous, but nobody will tell you where the meetings are. But believe it or not, the amount of fear that people operate in, as if that were the truth, far exceeds any realistic outpicturing of that kind of scenario. You are all under attack, the world is in danger, whatever you want to say is there to prompt you to move into fear, and in this case, to ask an external authority, in most cases a government, but probably not now, to protect you. You must protect me, you must protect me, I need help. And then you go into agreement about your own limitation, and you give the authority to the one who is frightening you. What kind of sense does that make? Now, you don't sit down and logically work that out. You know, and say, I think I'll, you know, whip myself or beat myself up. But most of the time we wind up doing that, of giving our power away to the fear that made us afraid to begin with. And we lose track of the very definite sense, the very real sense of who we truly are in this process. However, if you can understand that this is the agreement that you have all entered into, and it's the way you are being controlled, you can begin to change things. Everyone who has an investment in outcomes around ownership and control of property, of oil, as an example, has an investment of keeping others without, of keeping them away. They're going to interfere with my profits. Do you understand this? These are the creations and these are the symbols of this time. There have been other symbols used to wage war historically, but this is what you have come to now. Now understand this, please. In this moment in time, in this moment today, you are safe, and you are sitting someplace, and you are having an experience of a text. Now we will tell you this, you are always in this place in some dimension. How you understand time will change as you begin to work in frequency. But you can as easily heal yourself when you were two as you can in this moment, as you can in 10 years, once you understand that how you move through dimensions does not adhere to this timetable that you are working in agreement of. It is an artificial construct that you have created in order to organize experience. So I put a label on, well, that happened, this, that happened, then, that happened, this, that, and that. And what this is saying is that when, let's say, for example, we are working on healing. Well, we can go to a time when our immune system was working much more radically or much better than it is, maybe, than I perceive it working at this particular moment. And I can tap into the energy of my immune system at that particular time, because that particular time still exists in this moment. Okay. If you have a memory of someone you love, and let's say an enjoyment of being with a person that you love, okay, and you go back to that memory, what we call a memory, and you sit with that for a while, and a smile comes on your face, and your body relaxes, and you get a sense of being in the presence of that person. You are transcending dimensional time. Right? You are in a place that exists, that already exists, that you never did know. Oh, that was a long time ago. Who says you can't enjoy it now? See, we do that with negative emotions all the time. I will bet you, you can dredge up a piece of guilt that's 50 years old and feel just as guilty about it then as you do, or just feel guilty about it now as you did then. Or fear, or anger, or anything that has not been healed yet. But you know, it's very interesting with us human beings is many times we will not do that with positive feelings or, oh, that was in the past. Well, you can look at it that way if you want to. But I don't think you have to. Right? I think those experiences of love and light and grace and healing are still with you. And you can plug into or tap into that energy if you choose to do that. It's right there. It didn't go anyplace. Now understand this. If you imagine your safety is now, you can see your safety outpictured and presented and claimed in future time, because as we have told you, time is time is time. Time is now, is now, is now. I am word through all that I see before me is an inclusive of what you would call the future. It happens now. It is accessed through the now, but it is the truth. In other words, it is accessible now to me in what I am calling this present moment. But the present is eternal. So what would make me think, it is available to me in this present moment, but it's not going to be available to me in the next one? What? Well, I have it here in this room, but I'm not going to have it when I go upstairs or when I go in my car or this or that. Come on. And so we would like you now to take a moment and do this with us.
And we'll do this very slowly, if you will, if you got a book.
I am now choosing to claim my power back from any systems of fear that have been created to keep me in limitation by any formalized structure, including government and including religion, that may be binding me to a sense of helplessness and fear. I am now choosing to become aware of myself in my power as a divine being. I am now knowing myself as free. I am word through this intention, word I am word. And as you do this, you make a decision. You will see the artifice, the illusion. You will see the control, and you will see the deceit in the structures of fear that are outpictured on this plane. You are choosing this with an awareness to rise above it and dismantle it through this intention. So it doesn't just disappear because you want it to disappear. Well, that's an illusion, it's going to go away. It needs to be, this word has been used a number of times in this book, you need to dismantle it, you need to take it apart. Okay? Because the structure of it, even though you pretend you don't want it anymore, even though you pretend it's not there, the structure of it is still there. It needs to be taken apart. I am now choosing to dismantle all of the matrices of fear that I have invented in consciousness as I withdraw my energy from them and lift to a higher sight. I know that I am free of external control. I'm free in the knowing of my worth as a free man, as a free woman, as a divine aspect of the Creator. Word, I am word through this intention. Word, I am word. We are told, and it is suggested in this book, as well as others somewhat like this, is that in higher states of consciousness, fear does not exist. You say, yeah, but what about this? What about that? Actually, war and separateness doesn't exist. Huh. Well, for the last 20 minutes, how many people in here thought about war and separateness? And in those times of not thinking about war and separateness, did war and separateness exist for you? What happened? Just a suggestion. Don't analyze that, okay? Just a suggestion to stop and take a look at that and realize, because the mind can certainly switch all of a sudden on and say, well, what about this, what about that, blah, 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 blah. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about the mind's reflection on what. The mind has a certain level of awareness that has not been raised up yet. But we're talking about a higher consciousness, not of the thinking mind necessarily, not of the intellect. Because the intellect primarily will probably always live in duality. That's the nature of the intellect. It will probably always live in a place of questioning. It will probably always exist in a place of searching, non-satisfaction. That's just what it's there for. Okay, that's what it does. We wouldn't learn anything intellectually unless it did what it did. Constantly kind of, well, it might be satisfied with an answer to a question for a period of time and then kind of gets kicked in again, needs something else. It's just what it does. But when we are in a higher state of consciousness, whatever that means to you, whatever that is for you, our sight and our perception is very, very different from what it might have been in a lower state of consciousness. Even who are, you will notice, I notice this an awful lot, that, and I'm really thankful to you for this, is that when we are here on Sunday mornings, even though we might be playing a role of student and teacher, or somebody's up here and somebody's back there, is really, we all kind of let go of that one. You know, we're just being together. And in that being together, we don't stop and think, oh, well, this is nice being together. Right? We're not thinking about that necessarily. We just are. We are in that place of awareness that doesn't need to question and doesn't need to understand with the intellect or the thinking mind necessarily. Is just present. And so what's being suggested here is you don't have to reserve that spot for Sunday mornings. We told you help was the chapter, and that the fear that tells you you require it and you are in danger needs to be dismantled, and we will explain this to you. There's a difference between saying I need help and I am open to help. It is the tool of control that keeps you in the belief that you are not safe. When someone says to you, oh, I think I read that already, didn't I? Sorry. Wrong page. As this is stated, your reality will begin to shift, and it will happen this way. You will begin to notice very quickly where you are leading yourself in ways that you have been indoctrinated by. I don't pick up a hitchhiker. I don't open the door. I have to unplug the phone. It might be somebody bad. I have to change the lock, whatever the behavior is. Now, we are not telling you not to make sense in your choices. You have been gifted with discernment, and discernment means you understand that what you are required to do. But once you understand that you do not have to make these choices based in fear, you will liberate the self to become inclusive and to be open-armed, as it were, to those you see before you. Every man and woman on this planet only wants to be loved. There's another standout sentence. Every man and woman on this planet only wants to be loved. Whether they are Kim Jong-un, whether they are Donald Trump, whether they are Hillary Clinton, no matter who they happen to be, every man and woman on this planet only wants one thing, to be loved. Now, they might fall for a lot of disguises about that. If I'm rich and I'm in control of everything and I can bully everybody around, well, that feels like a pretty good substitute. But it isn't really, and your heart knows that. That is all they want, whether or not they will admit it. All they want is love. All they want is love. And what love truly is, interesting to turn that around, isn't it? And what love truly is true acceptance regardless of who or what they think or they believe they may have been, done, or seen, or anything else. Say that again. This is all they want, whether or not they will admit it. All they want is love. And what love truly is true acceptance regardless of who or what they think or they believe they may have been, done, seen, or anything else. We offer you this. I am now choosing to see my neighbor, to see all those before me in love, and I know that love is unconditional acceptance. Or what what was called unconditional positive regard in psychological circles, okay? Love is unconditional acceptance. Now again, somebody had mentioned this earlier, I think when we were doing the other book, we're not talking about the personality self. We're not talking about your personality self loving another personality self and patting myself on the back of, oh, what a good boy am I, right? Because I'm loving this personality self even though I think they're a turd, okay? That's not it. It is my divine self that is recognizing that even though I might not be able to see it, even though I might not be able to feel it, even though I might not be able to experience it at this particular moment, is that that divine self exists within you also. Okay? It cannot not exist in you. You might not see that, you might not know that, you might not feel that. In fact, you might totally reject that. But I am willing to see that within you because I know that is there. I was writing a song the other day about holding the light for people who have lost it, because people have held the light for me when I've lost it and given me the opportunity to find it again. And it was a haunting line that the Holy Spirit must have written, because I didn't do it. Was something to the effect of a truth that we sometimes forget is that I can't hold my brother in the dark and expect to see the light. Because you can't. If I am putting someone in the dark, I cannot see the light myself. As you will end with this paragraph here, because I think this, all of this stuff is so powerful today. I don't know where it's coming from. Well, I know where it's coming from, but it's not me. As you work with this on a practical level, your life will transform. When you change the way you see people, the people you see will change. We guarantee you this. In our last text, we told you to sit in a bus station and see everybody before you as perfect. In this text, we are going to take you a little further. You are going to sit in a park or in a cafe or any place where there is transit. Could be a coffee shop. You're going to imagine with you that as you sit, you become a beam of light. And if you wish to do it this way, you may. You may activate the light in the center of the heart and bring it all around you and radiate in your frequency. But sit in the park or the cafe and be the light. Now, as you sit there, we want you to do this. We want you to stand up and claim this silently. I am now knowing myself as an aspect of the Creator, and all that I see before me will be reflected as such. Thank you, God. Thank you. Amen. We'll see you next week, okay? Thank you all very much. Fellow space travelers. That'd be funny if you were in Starbucks and you stood up and a whole bunch of other people stood up. Well, wouldn't that be a trip, huh? Well, they're reading the same book, right?